It's Ken Bergen here, and welcome to the Hospo Reset podcast. Each episode, I explore trends, innovation, and smart thinking in the hospitality industry with a particular focus on restaurants, cafes, and food service. You'll find the show notes and links for today's episode on your podcast app and look for the link at the top of the hosporeset.com website. Don't forget to subscribe to the weekly Hospo Reset newsletter and connect with me on LinkedIn and on Twitter. Hello, Ken Bergen here from the Hospo Reset podcast. Today I'm talking with Michelle Pascoe. She's a customer and team retention specialist from Oops. She'll explain what Oops is in a minute. We've got a great topic today, all about what Disney can teach us about hospitality systems and service. I went to Disneyland many years ago in Anaheim on the west coast of the US. Others have been maybe in Europe or the East Coast or different places, but Michelle's been many times. It's certainly a very big part of people's imagination, even if they haven't been there. You know, Disney TV, we got it kind of manifesting in all sorts of ways. So really looking forward to what we're going to learn today. Hey, Michelle, great to have you here today.
Wonderful. Thank you for having me, Ken. I'm really looking forward to sharing the Disney experience that I've had over the years, both as a business woman and as well as a mum and a teenager going there. So
yeah, okay. So you first went as a teenager, did you?
Yeah, so well actually my first experience with Disneyland was every Sunday night watching Walt present a show.
I put my hand up for that one, yes. Can we admit that it was black and white TV?
Yes. Sitting there on the edge of his desk smoking a cigarette, which is very uncommon these days.
Interesting. Yeah.
And that really took me into this world because I have three much older brothers. So they were very much into Davy Crockett and all those sort of parts that people don't realise that was really the early days, apart from Mickey Mouse, was a very strong part of Walt Disney and his brother Roy, and bringing the animatronics and things over years and how that developed. So my first trip to Disney was when I was 16. I'm not going to say the year because everyone will guess how old I am then. But I went with my mum, and of course then it was all about the rides. It was just that fairy floss, the turkey drumsticks, it was full on. Yeah. And then, and that's how I saw it, purely as the enjoyment, that magical experience, but being part of that as a guest. I then returned a few years later in 2004. That time it was with my family as a mum, and that was a different experience again in California. Then I went back in 2008 to Orlando, and then I started seeing this from a business person. I started my company Oops back in 1994.
So you better just tell us what stands for.
Yeah.
Because you wear a few different hats with your business offer. Tell us a bit about it before we come back to Disney.
And that's why it all links in with Disney. So in 1994, I found myself in a situation of, where did I want to go with my career? What did I want to do? And service and experience has been a strong key factor of mine. Even at an early age, I went to a small bush school of only 10 kids. And when we finally got the telephone when I was in about year four, I took it upon myself to be the school secretary. And it wasn't just answering the telephone, hello. It was that whole experience of saying the number, saying the Kentland Public Primary School, this is Michelle Dixon, how may I help you at the age of eight? And I know people just think it was very professional.
Sounds a little bit Lily Tomlin to me.
Yes, for a one-man school. And I always thought that it wasn't just about service, it was how you made people feel, even when it was creating a wonderful experience or perhaps even a service recovery. So in 1994, I decided to establish my business Oops, which is Optimum Operating Procedures and Services. Really, it's a training company for frontline team members, getting them to see the potential that they have inside them. Because I know, Ken, you've worked as I have in this industry for so long, that not everybody has had the opportunity and be blessed as we have to perhaps have had that support and that those people that have seen that potential inside us. So I saw myself being a trainer and connecting with the leaders, building up themselves with that intentional leadership, but also being able to encourage and see that potential in their front line, and just to see, you know what it's like when you when you're there in the front of the classroom, and you can see people, but all of a sudden they just there's that spark, and it'll be just one word you say, and their eyes light up. That makes them, they sit that little bit straighter, and they're really proud. Whether they're cleaning the cutlery, cleaning the bathrooms, cooking an amazing meal, being that foyer person or at the bar, doesn't matter where you are in that organisation. Everybody's part is so important.
Yeah, and what you're identifying is, I mean, there's the workshop experience, and sometimes it's the Zoom experience at the minute, but the workshop in my, I always think is best of all. And then it's the translation, which the next day we walk in and work has not changed.
Yes.
But we've changed.
Yes.
And we want to do some implementation and shift things around. So that's going to be interesting to think about how we do this with Disney. So let's just talk about what is this Disney experience? Because you've not only been as a customer, as a visitor, but you've been to the Disney Institute where they train people from all over the world in, you know, delivering that exceptional customer experience. Tell us, what is this Disney experience?
As the years went on, I went multiple times. I found out all about the Disney Institute, and going to America 5 to 6 times a year, either to speak or to attend different conferences, I thought, hey, I love Disney so much and what they stand for. Why not be a part of this Disney Institute? So the first time was in 2018, which is the CX Summit, Customer Experience Summit in California. And it just blew me away because I've speak a lot of conferences, attend a lot of conferences, but this was being able to get behind the scenes. And this is where it's different. When you're there as a guest, you're just seeing it from here. Being part of the CX Summit, which is one I would highly recommend to anybody.
We'll put a link to the Disney Institute in the show notes too, for people to explore.
Because they have a lot of 1 day, 2 day mixed courses. Then I went back the next year and went to Orlando and did the Disney approach to quality customer service. But that CX Summit gave me an opportunity to see exactly what was behind the scenes and how they recreated what you saw in the movie, such as Cars, and I'll go into that a little bit more in more detail, the movie. But it all stemmed from the values of what Walt and Roy had back in the early 1900s of being, you know, born there, and then building that through their whole organisation across multiple fields. As you said, there's films, there's television shows, there's books, there's everything that they're into. But how we actually see that in the theme parks is going behind the scenes, and it is the devil in the detail is what we've always spoken about. But that, the detail and the intentional leadership.
Right. Okay. Tell us a little bit about the detail side of things. Obviously, we can't go through. There'd be thousands of them. But what? And I'm interested. Like, is we go as a wide-eyed tourist, we have one experience. But when we go to places as hospitality people, we're looking. How do they do that? We're trying to peek behind the scenes and check the kitchen and count how many staff are managing how many tables and all those kind of things. What? So tell us a bit more about the detail that.
Yeah, that side, and that's where you're right. We go in as customer service specialists and we think, oh, we're trying to see things, but actually being part of this summit gave us an opportunity to be behind the scenes that not even the cast members get to see. So the details such as colour, when you go in, you have every resort is broken up into lands. You've got Tomorrowland and you know, like Star Wars, and you've got your cowboys and all those sorts of things. But where it comes down to the colour and the detail is, and it's not until you actually think about it, because you look at it as a guest, wow, this looks really cool. But when you go into the detail, you realise the garbage bins have changed colour. Now, this was something that Walt actually created right from the very start when he used to sit at a theme park. He's with his two young daughters. They were dirty. There was garbage. And that's where he started bringing this idea of bringing on Disneyland. And so he created garbage bins with his engineering team because he didn't actually want to see the garbage. So these are the color-coded for each area. Then there are costumes that are themed. The actual rides are color-coded. And then the stores, what they're selling, how it's all set out. Even the paving. For each land that you go into, Walt said that your toes can feel the difference. That's where you get the energy from. And walking on the paving, when you first walk in, it's the cobblestones, it's the tramways, it's all that. And then you'll go into the Wild West, and that changes the paving again.
Right. So in a sense, we're not only creating a state, quote unquote, for our customers and visitors, but our staff walk in and put the uniform on. Well, I'm a big fan of uniforms, and kind of enter a different state. They had an argument with their girlfriend this morning, and we come in and we leave all that behind.
And that's really true, because it's not just about customer service, is not just about what you're delivering to your customer, your guest, in the case of Disney, but it's that internal customer service. And as you know, Ken, they're not separate. They have to work together. And in the case with Disney, and we'll go into this, how they induct the teams, how they train them, how they choose them, all the underground passageways. You never see a cast member going from Toy Story over to Star Wars.
Oh, that's all done underground.
Everything is done underground. But when you go underground, and this is having that CX summit, you actually go underground where the cast members work. And it's just walking on the hallways. It's the positive interactions. It's the comments. It's the information. They have a daily newspaper. All these
And, you know, you're bringing up something. There's kind of so many places that we go to, because we're often taken around to see, if we go to a club or a pub or a restaurant, you say, oh, just show me. There's the shiny, beautiful front. And then you go out, as soon as the part the people can't see, there's something broken and torn and hasn't been clean. And the garbage bins you mentioned often have never been washed. And there's a kind of, and then there's a staff member sitting on a milk crate having a meal. It jars, doesn't it?
And so having that experience, and I'll go into even more detail a bit later on, is the whole staff recognition program, is loyalty program, is just as important, which that it is to the loyalty programs of the cast members. And that's what we have to think about in our businesses. How do our team know that we care for them? How do we lead with that heart?
Right.
How are we intentional leaders that brings them, not just brings them along the journey, but they're a part of the journey?
Yeah, because like correct pay and enough hours, that's just like the price of entry, isn't it? That's just a given. That's not the end of it. That's just the start, really. Now, you mentioned the detail, but you also mentioned intentional leadership. Just before we dive on, can you just tell us what do you mean?
That's one of the key that they speak about through all their programs. It's having that intentional leadership. As we all know, it all starts from the CEO or the business owner, and it comes down. So intentional leadership, looking at the values of the business. Now, with Disney, they have four key values, which is courtesy, safety, show, and efficiency. Now, they're all very well to say those, and for each organisation that I work with, and I'm sure you have, Ken, they have
the courtesy, safety, and efficiency, I understand. What show is just like the whole
presentation. Yes, so the place. That's that area that your customers interact with you. That could be over the telephone, your website, your social media posts, and, of course, face-to-face. So so it's thinking about your values. What are the actions and behaviours behind those values? Because if you don't train your team, because, all right, you've selected the people that have got the best attitude and you can always train them how to do a skill set, but what they need to know is they don't need to improvise. As soon as people start improvising on values because you haven't trained them, that's when things start to spiral down. So as an intentional leader, you need to show them, model those behaviours and actions, but tell them what those values are.
And I'm guessing make it that actually they don't need to improvise, because sometimes people do improvise because they're hit with a situation they don't know how to handle. So they'll do what, you know, their family does or what they saw someone else do.
Yes. Which may be totally the other end of the spectrum.
Yeah, not what you
wish
want
them to do. Because, as we know, the biggest complaint we have from customers is lack of consistency. And that derives from when our frontline teams and even our managers improvise on that service or that component of that service recovery that is not consistent with what they've had before or what they'll have again in the future from other team members.
Yeah, so someone might chime in at this stage, say, this sounds very scripted and very controlled and a little bit of a straitjacket. What do you say to that?
And look, it's true. I can see why people would think that. I remember, you know, in my early days, I used to train people for telemarketing. That was a part of my business. Oh, my gosh, like it feels like 100 years ago now. But without having that script, and it didn't have to be wrote, what it was, it just gave you pointers on if people said something, how you would respond to it. And let me give you an example. I know when I'm doing my training with frontline teams, I use honesty as a value that many businesses have. And when I put that out to teams over the years, I had in one room, I had these two beautiful people, and one girl said, well, honesty to me is if I find $10 at the front of the bar, I'll put it up and I'll walk around and find who belongs to it. Hey, that's honesty, isn't it? And another staff member said, yeah, well, see, honesty to me is if I'm behind the bar and I break something or something happens or I need to tell them, telling the next person and being honest about that, that to me is honesty. So they're both that same value, but can you see how they're perceived differently?
Yeah.
And that's why we need to then put those actions and behaviors, not to be scripted, but just to give them, this is the value of our business and this is what it means.
Different
to
life
us.
Experiences brought up different examples.
And then people just go, oh, wow, I really understand it. Because otherwise, yeah, it's just that improvisation. But empowerment is really important. And I know that was, what was that, the word of the early 2000s?
Yeah, I was going to say empowerment. press the buzzer for that one.
Oh, you know, all those cool words. But it is really true. And we saw that, you know, when we did the CX Summit and then back in Orlando going to Epcot, we went out on our own and they just wanted us to walk around and come back with information about how we saw empowerment. And one situation was one of the custodial cast members. Now, the custodial people, all dressed in white, they're the cleaners. They're picking up the garbage, they're cleaning away the tables. They do such a key job, as we know.
Yeah, interesting that it's in white. You'd think, yes. Oh, white, isn't that the most impractical color?
It is. But, you know, they look absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
You know, with the brooms. And I'm sure we've all seen it on YouTube or whatever where you'll see the person with the broom and they'll come up with a mop and they'll do the beautiful outline of Mickey Mouse on the pavement. That's all scripted, because what's that doing? If you're in a queue, and seriously, that's one thing that Disney can't avoid is long queues. You could be standing for a couple of hours and it gets a bit tedious. But you have people, cast members telling you all the time, not just signs, but cast members telling you where you're up to, how long it's going to be. Then if you have a cleaner who comes up and does that just out of the blue and draws Mickey, what does that do? Oh, it takes you from there of almost any here to, oh, my goodness, part of magic.
Yeah, yeah, interesting. Okay. So tell us, so part of this first CX conference was, okay, off you go, everyone. Go for a walk around and bring us back your feedback. What were some other things?
Look, I suppose it was, apart from just us walking around and seeing it for ourselves, it was actually going back behind the scenes. For one example, we know that they have these amazing parades that go through the heart of all Disneys around the world during the day, and they also have a big parade at nighttime. And there are live animals, particularly horses, in there. Mm-hmm. And it's hot, there's a lot of noise going on. So just going behind the scenes of where those horse stables were, that gave you an insight that nobody would ever see, because all you see is a headless horseman going along on his beautiful black stallion or the white stallion. But going behind the scenes, and, you know, I've been brought up on a farm, so stables can be smelly, there can be a bit of poo, da-da-da. Not here. Honestly, you could have eaten off the ground. So not only did they care and have intention about the experience for the cast members and for the guests, but the experience of what the live animals were having as well, and how the handlers interacted with them, how they went out to farms. So that was interesting. It was also an opportunity to go behind the scenes of some amazing experiences, such as I was mentioning, the Cars movie. When we've all seen Cars, it's there in the desert. I find Cars is a great example of team leadership, because there you got Lightning McQueen thinking he's really cool, I could do it all by myself, and then he realizes he does need other people to get to where he wants to be on his journey. They have the movie, but then when you go there and you get behind the scenes, oh my goodness, the technology of how they've scaled that movie up into real life. But Flo's Diner, the Cozy Cone Motel, they have to be exactly the same as they are on the film, but just scaled up. But the way they do it is just so, it's so finite. They don't miss a single detail.
Yeah. So the people who execute that, as in the, it sounds to me that attention to detail is a pretty important character trait for people who are staff there.
Yes.
Is that a kind of like a make or break thing? You have to have attention to detail, because there's lots of different staff. There's some of the kind of just the ones who drive you a bit crazy, but they're so friendly and so beautiful with customers. It's just they forget their orders. Different types. But it sounds like, am I just speculating here, that that's what?
Look, I think like all organisations, we realise that having a skill set is one thing, but it is having that attitude. And the one thing Disney's always looked at is that you have to have somebody who actually desires and has the heart to create an amazing experience. Sure.
Great. Beautiful.
Well, it doesn't matter how well we choose. I mean, when I was there, they had over 120,000 cast members just between Orlando and California, you know, not counting all around the world. Of course, you're going to get your people there that have their odd days that are a bit off. That's just human nature, and some that may be a little bit more robotic. But let me give you an example. It's all about their induction. They have a 3-day induction. So they've already been assigned, they've gone through all the application process, et cetera. And what they want to show is not just their staff or their cast members learning about service and what their role is going to be, blah, 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 but actually experiencing it. And they did this for us on our very first day of the CX Summit. When we came into the room, they sat us down and we had a card that we had to write out what sort of cupcake we'd like, what sort of icing, and what sort of topping. And we wrote our name on a card. And then when we came back after an experience for a trip around the park, when we came back in, the tables had been beautifully dressed. The name card had now been beautifully printed. And then out came a server who presented our cupcake to us. And it was like, wow. So that was our experience as being a paid member of the CX Summit. What they do for their cast members is when they do the same thing in the morning, they ask them about their lunch, they go out and have an experience. When they come back from that experience, when they walk back in, they have their senior director standing at the door and saying, "May I present to you Mr. Ken Bergen, who'll be working on the ghost train?" And you come in and you sit down, and it doesn't matter whether you're 18, it's your first job at 16, or you're 80, because they have multiple generations. You feel like, this is amazing.
Yeah,
and you sit down and the table's dressed and the meal's there, and I've got the feeling, haven't you?
Yeah.
They could have told them how to do it and they would have gone, oh, yeah. They've experienced.
Yes. And this brings up something, a little saying that always sticks in my mind, that staff can't truly offer an experience at a level beyond what they have experienced themselves. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the classic thing might be fine dining. If staff haven't actually sat down in a fine dining experience, how are they going to be able to do that? But, you know, in these days of staff shortages, we're so frantic. Just there's your pad, there's your apron. Table 15 needs an order.
Yes.
Go. Yeah, and you're just reminding us of whatever people's version of induction training is, just how critically important that is.
We promised them a lot in the interview, and this is where I've always said, what you promised in the interview, oh, my gosh, that first day, you have to be there. I don't care how busy you are as the CEO or the business owner.
You better deliver on day one.
You're there. You're there on that first day. And God forbid something dreadful's happened to you, you make sure that your second in charge is there. There's no excuses. With people in the hospitality industry over the years and CEOs who haven't even bothered, they didn't even want to know the names of their teams, even duty managers. And to me, that's absolutely appalling because you may be up here with the ideas, but it's that person on that front line, kid, or that older person who's just returned to the workforce after many years not being out there. And if you're not showing them care and heart, then how are you expecting them to deliver this amazing experience? If you haven't even bothered to find out their name, like things have certainly changed, I must say. I have amazing clients. I don't deal with those ones. That's going back, 25 years ago now. Absolutely shocking. But people have changed and they need to because we need to, it's all about being people.
Yeah.
It's not just about money, money, money.
Let's talk about our cast member comes in and do sort of the kind of base level work for a while. And then there's promotion. And I guess Disney has a huge range of different job titles and kind of hierarchy in different ways. But bringing that back to independent operator, what did you learn about staff promotion and directing other staff and all those kind of things, which are really important if we're going to be able to have people delegating and we're not going to be there the whole time that we're open?
And that's probably the biggest thing is delegation. And I don't know about you, Ken, but, when I first started my business, when you're that sole trader, you're doing everything. And it does get hard because everything's up here in your head. And then when you realise you need more people, because to grow, you need more people, but you need to delegate. And that's where trust is so key. And too often we see senior leaders who just believe that they should be a part of everything. They need to be a part of everything. And it's not that they don't think the team are capable. It's just hard for them to be able to delegate. It doesn't mean that they're just giving them the junky jobs. But if we don't delegate work, then the team don't see that you have trust in us. And I think particularly over the last 2 years that many of our senior leadership team have had to have taken on the roles of going back to being like that sole trader, so to speak, in private business of doing everything. And it's now going, okay, we've got the team, we're rebuilding, we have to delegate, we have to put the right people in place. And it's always looking to who in our team has that potential. It's understanding that we may have employed somebody to do one thing, and perhaps that was at the front door, or perhaps in the bar or the gaming area, or even out the back washing dishes, but then we find out something about them. We take the time to learn about what their interests are, what perhaps courses they're doing, what their thoughts are, and this is by having team meetings, having discussions, and then you can think, you know what, that person would be absolutely ideal.
And maybe we're realising that actually we haven't set any systems up in those particular areas because we've just relied on some person who knows how to do it.
Yes.
And or never does it very well, but they kind of turn up.
Yeah.
And now, sort of the lack of systems, which my understanding of the Disney thing is everything is completely, well, regimented is a kind of harsh word, but it's systematised, completely organised. There's room for kind of initiative because customers are all different shapes and sizes, but nothing that's going to allow for kind of the wrong variations and things like that.
Look, having systems, having procedures in place, I think are absolutely key. And the more now, particularly in the last few years and certainly into the future, it's all about automation. Because when you automate things.
Yeah. So I wanted to get onto that, the kind of automation, use of technology, those kind of things. I mean, I wear my little Fitbit thing, which tracks my steps. But people wear Apple Watches and all sorts of things. And I understand at Disneyland too, you get a smart band, which you use for your payments and all sorts of things. Well, talk to the, and we can look at a big company and say, oh, well, they can afford to spend millions on all those sort of thing, but translating their technology and their use of it back to our kind of local situations. What's your advice there? What do you see people doing?
Well, it's quite interesting when you talk about those Fitbits and the technology. In 2018 in California, they didn't have those smart wristbands. When I returned a year later in Orlando, whole different process with that smart band. It was from the moment you checked in, those smart bands were unbelievable. You could go, you could open your hotel room from there. You were able to reserve your place on a particular ride or from this. And the app on your phone is phenomenal. You can do so much with that, booking dining, booking events, booking shows. And I think if we relate that back to here, what we have now is, I know a few years ago, a few of the clubs introduced apps, particularly in the dining room, and then realized, hey, wait on, we've got all this concrete around us, the Wi-Fi system's not working too well, the staff hadn't communicated to why, you know, the table 13 have sat down and then but 14 have been standing in the queue, why is 13 getting their food before us? And so lack of communication then caused upsets amongst our guests and members. And
buying the shiny toy app ahead of thinking through the processes.
I'm thinking of situations
Where I've seen it working extremely well, busy places. Well, in Sydney, you might know the Boathouse group. They've got a few different restaurants, and I love the way they use it. You sit down, you just kind of order with an app. It's snappy, it's fast, there's no waving your hands, where's the waiter and all those sorts of things. But also other places where they use it, the wait list extensions of some of these apps too. So they grab your details, go for a walk. It's going to be at least half an hour, but I know, so I will text you, et cetera, et cetera.
And I think technology, we've been through some pretty difficult times these last 2 years. QR codes have now come under their own at last. I remember when they came out years and years ago, I was all for it. People just sort of looked at me, and I used to have a QR code on my business card. If you downloaded an app on your phone and then put your camera over through this app, I then came alive and I spoke to you, which was really cool. But people would go, oh, my gosh, what is this? Whereas now with QR codes, we're so used to it.
Yeah.
The QR codes for menus, which is good, but that's where that place, that show comes into context, because that is, in many cases, that first connection they have with your dining area, so your menu has to be spot on.
Yes.
You have to make sure that it's easy to read.
And designed to be seen on a little screen.
Yes. Yeah. And then you still need the human connection for delivering that meal.
Yes. Yeah. And I think also that kind of concierge thing too. If you see a few people scratching their head about what is this app thing and all the rest, someone is straight over to just explain, have you got the app, or let me just show you, et cetera, et cetera.
And even the concierge, because that's the main role, but even the person who's clearing the table, if they notice that somebody next to them is having difficulty, you know, feel empowered that they can go up to them and say,
you're right. Yeah, it's a good reminder. Everyone actually has a concierge role if they're noticing, because that noticing, training to notice.
Yes.
Is part of that whole kind of staff selection and ongoing training. We mentioned about queues, and that was a memory many years ago in Disneyland. It was a stinking hot day, and I was determined to go on that riverboat cruise. Oh boy, it was hot. But there's so many ways that people, queues fascinate me really, and the way they're managed. I had an experience just yesterday in Harris Farm Markets, which is one of our great Australian retailers, I think,
yes.
You know, massive with all their fruit and vegetables and groceries. And when I went to pay, I thought, oh, my God, look at this queue. It's like seriously about 40 people with trolleys, but it was moving really fast and the checkouts were really organised and they were directing you to the next one. And people don't mind if they think the queue is fair and it's moving quickly.
Yes.
But even so, you say Disneyland might be an hour and a half or 2 hours. What have you seen from Disneyland queue management that we could use at the pub or the hot bar that everyone's kind of lined up for, that sort of thing?
Yes.
What are some lessons there?
I think it's where it has to be managed by people. It's having that interaction. Signs are fine. On Disneyland today, where you are now, you have a 1 hour wait. All right, that's fine. But that, as you said, you can stand in a queue for 3 hours for a 3 minute ride and go, well, let's start joining the queue again. But it's that people interaction where you've got cast members who, like I was saying, may come up with the mop and bucket and do something. A cast member who will walk along, know, how are you? You're going to really love the ride. Connecting with the children, talking to the adults, making that connection. And what I've seen here and spoken to a number of my clients over the years, you know, particularly when you've got long queues in dining areas. And as I said, now it's a little bit different because you can do your ordering from your phone or from your table. But if you've got a long queue, grab out some little pieces of garlic bread or something and pass it along the queue.
Distractions, it's
suggestive selling as well. But like, it's going to cost you a couple of dollars. But my goodness, it's the anxiety and the build-up that people have when they get into a queue and then they get there and then you've got the staff member who doesn't even look up and goes, yes, what do you want? And it's that lack of connection. You think, I've just been standing here for a half an hour and you don't even look at me in the eye.
And I think staff are a bit, they're kind of freaked out about being part of a system where they feel the vibe. People, yes. they actually terrified if they look up and catch their eyes, they're going to get a blast.
A part of action, and this happened to me a couple of years ago. I was going up regional New South Wales looking at some clubs and I stopped at this Macca's. It was, you know, on one of the major freeways. It was 5 to 5 and there was this lady who was a much older lady at the time. And why I'm saying that, she'd been standing on her feet and she was a cranky, sour puss of a woman. Yeah, what do you want sort of thing? And I said, say her name was Mary, I can't remember now. I said, how are you, Mary? I said, you look like you've had a big day. And she actually looked up and she goes, yeah, I have. And I said, oh, well, what time are you knocking off? She goes, well, I've done a double shift because one of those young kids wouldn't come. She'd literally been standing there for 10 hours. Now, I can't blame her. I just said, you know, I really appreciate you being here. And I gave her my order. She asked me, well, where are you traveling to? And she goes, you know what? She goes, you've made my day. I'm knocking off in 5 minutes. And it was just that moment.
Yeah.
It didn't take any more out of my time.
Yeah.
Still processing my order, but I actually recognised her. And I think that's where we have to think as customers as well, Ken, that what are we doing and how are we helping with that provider of the service? Are we connecting with them? And that's where it comes down to that internal customer service. How are we interacting with our peers? Are we supporting them when they're busy?
So a typical keeping staff engaged, there's another kind of bingo buzzword, yes. but, you know, engaged and keen and enthusiastic. What's the ongoing rhythm of staff training and staff interaction behind the scenes with Disney?
Yeah, look, it's actually connecting with them. There was a lovely girl, one of the senior directors, who had come up on the jungle ride. Now, a lot of the senior directors had come through, which was one of the early rides out on the water that Walt had developed. So it's quite interesting how many of them have come through the ranks. And hers was actually every month she just chose 10 staff members. So it could be the cleaner from her area, frontline person, a chef, whatever, sat down in a room. She literally said, I sat on my hands and I would ask them for feedback. And I would zip this. I wouldn't go, I would try that, done that, wouldn't work. Oh, I've heard this before.
Mm-hmm.
Not even thinking those things, but just listening. And that's why she said, I'd sit on my hands and actually taking the feedback. With cars was one of those. It's a beautiful area that they've cut out. But with that wristband, to reserve your place, because you've got a certain amount you can do each year, each day, you have to walk. You walk past and there's the entry point. But that where you do your wristband is way at the actual main entry point of the ride. So you have to walk in a good 300 metres. So they'd walk off the main road, they'd walk all the way down there, hit the wristband, walk all the way back, get back to the main area of Springs, and then they would Radiator Springs, and then they would continue on. And what the frontline team members say, why not bring that box for them to reserve to the thoroughfare of that the road to the cars ride and to the main street of Radiator Springs? Hadn't thought of that. See, the technology and the engineers have thought about in every other place, the Peter Pan ride or the spaceship ride, it was just there. You're walking on the main street. But with cars, you had to go into the ride. So listening to the front line went, that aha moment.
So it sounds like a systematic process of eliciting staff feedback. And obviously there's the sit around a table and let's talk.
Yes.
There might be the kind of regular monthly three-question feedback form or the kind of focus group. So I'm sure there's different things. But it's certainly, for a lot of operators, something they love the idea of, but 6 months later, Still haven't done it.
Yes.
What are you seeing with some of your local hospitality clients where they're actually doing this pretty methodically and getting some good results? Mm. Well, what are some examples which are kind of taking a bit of that Disney essence?
That Disney approach. Mm. Look, for instance, I think community engagement is really key. And Ramsgate RSL are one of those phenomenal clubs. And I know over the years there are many, even like Bernie down at Shoal Haven, ex-servos there. There's a long list of my clients that have got that community engagement. But Ramsgate RSL not only do it for the community, but they've actually created a hallway. So I think it's called the Extraordinary Hall of Fame or something. I've probably got it wrong. But it's along the hallway to the staff room, they have acknowledgements of different team members.
Oh,
and
lovely.
It's just wow. Yeah. You know, if you go onto the LinkedIn profile of David Moorcroft or Nicole Heinrich or even Vicky Croner, who's the ops manager there, a phone call, they talk about it. And just the idea behind it is not only creating that sense of belonging within the organisation, because you're a particularly young team, but how they're learning about each other, understanding about who their peers are, who's working in their teams, acknowledging the,
This is way, way beyond the staff member of the month, and you look at it, the date is, the last one was 1990.
That's right. Well, see, with Disney, and you're right, you used to have that, tell us about a good thing that one of your staff members done. And the biggest thing of all, I said, oh, well, they're only just going to comment on their friends. What Disney has got, it's called the Four Keys Fanatic program. Okay. And where you nominate one of your peers for excellent service, but it has to relate to one of your values. So in Disney, it relates to the courtesy, the show, the efficiency, and the safety. And that's where I when I do my training and coaching with my clients is, if we have a loyalty program or a recognition program for your teams, it needs to relate back to your values.
Back to those values, yeah. And that gives people more confidence too, because, sometimes people, you ask them these questions and they just go blank.
Ooh.
Whereas if you kind of got some prompts like that.
Yes, they sort of go, because not everybody can think as quick as you and I can.
Yeah. Okay, there's so many ideas you're sharing here. So I'm really keen to think about other ways. I'm sure you've taken lots of Aussies over to the US, and the people listening to this podcast are from all around the world too. But, the people go and they have these sort of stellar experiences, and then they come back and they got to translate it back to their own situation.
Yes.
What's some kind of low-hanging fruit that you find people usually get started quickly, or they find fairly easy to implement, or not so complicated, doesn't need developing a new app or if you like.
And you're right, it's having something that is easy for them to do. And to me, it's taking the time and actually looking at the business and saying, what is something I can do differently here? Is it the layout of the furniture? Now, I remember one venue, they used to have their furniture, it was like a Coles cafeteria, and everybody just sat opposite each other in the lounges and the coffee table in between. Let's mix it up. And the CEO got it together. They spent a few hours, the team, and it just transformed the room. So have a look at that. How are you laying out the dining area? What is the foyer looking like? Could you put some colourful cushions in there? I know it will cost, money to do a whole redevelopment and a revamp, but there are little things, the aesthetic things.
Spotlight has cheap cushion covers.
Yes, it's really simple. Look at the colour schemes. Look about the aromas when you're walking through your venue. Can you change the smell? What's the music that they're listening to? Have you got any music? There's nothing worse than sitting in a club that's so quiet. It's just dead. But then there's that connection. We've all got membership cards. Members' names are on it. Mm-hmm. Use those names. And even if it's a name that's got 26 letters, have a go. Because I'm sure that person, you won't be the first person that they've stumbled over the name, but you've tried. That builds that connection. It's a
Yes. And whether it's club membership or just bookings, online bookings that lots of people do. I mean, my favourite Indian restaurant, I love them. I love the food. I love the service. But they never remember my name. They never kind of use my name, which would be just that extra little thing and would be quite capable.
It is. Yeah. It is. Even the pocket size information, I remember when Bankstown Sports Club, and this is going back many, many years ago, and when they started developing, it's huge. You know, there's so many different areas. They gave you like it was like a little mum map of where all the places were.
Yeah.
You know, they even have the tiling on the floor, and I know that Mark Condy really well, but even the tiling on the floor, I remember standing, because we do with many venues, the mystery shopping, which is my IP, is that we were at the front and I was saying, follow the golden tiles and you will arrive at, or follow the footprint of the monkey and you will arrive at. And it was just those sort of things. Like you could say, well, you go up there, turn left, go up those stairs, go down the left, da-da, but follow that. It's the changing of the carpet from place to place, a bit like Walt Disney when he said just changing the paving area.
The feeling under your feet.
Yes, took you from that area to another. It's those little things that you can do, but to me it's that true connection of the guest and the member with your frontline person, spending the time, saying hello to them. There's a way that you can have a 30-second really heartfelt chat with somebody without impacting other people's service.
And look, maybe in the CBD coffee place, there's a line every morning. You're never going to know their name. The sort of the warm, genuine smile and welcome. It's a pretty good substitute.
But, Ken, if you're going to that coffee shop every morning, they should know your name and they really start to know your order, and that's when you know you've got a really good barista.
Yes, yeah, and that's where technology can help
with
that as well. Mm. You can kind of, get the ordering app and kind of fire that up. And actually you'll do faster service that way.
Oh, you do. Look, I remember I was at a conference in New Zealand a couple of years ago and it was next to the casino there, excuse me, and it was a popular coffee shop. And you walked in and there was about 10 people, but as soon as each person walked through that door and lined up in a queue, somebody behind the counter went, "Hi, thank you for coming. We'll be with you soon."
Yeah,
this is unbelievable.
Okay. Yeah,
it was,
those Kiwis.
Everybody took it upon themselves to say hi. He's like, "This is really cool." And then it was that conversation. Yeah. And then they come along and they say, "So what's your order?" And then by the time you got to the barista, it was done. But it was that initial recognition.
The value of employing someone who is that personality, who's that type, just kind of effusive and bubbly and a little bit kind of uncontrollable in a good way.
And, you know, and I know some people go, "Oh, this is too much for me." Well, that's fine. Go and find that quiet coffee shop that's still serving coffee that's from a brand that comes out of a tin in a white thick cup and enjoy it.
Super hot. Okay, so Michelle, you've just got to helping us. Our minds are exploding a little bit with all the stuff you've been sharing. So how do people who want to learn, obviously travel's just a little bit challenging at the minute. What do you recommend for people who want to learn more about the Disney experience, kind of dive into that?
I know travel's unfortunately not on the cards for everybody this year. I head off to Palm Springs in a couple of weeks' time, so I'll be bringing some more information as I go and look at some resorts and casinos there. But unfortunately, Disney is not having any live events this year with the Institute, but they do have online. However, it's only for the US or Canada, which is dreadfully a shame, but they do have this beautiful book that I was given the CX Summit. It's called Be Our Guest, Perfecting the Art of Customer Service.
Okay,
which is an excellent book. You can actually go on, as you said, the website has a lot of information. There's social media. They've got a great presence on LinkedIn, so you can learn from them. And, of course, you can always hire me to come in and train your team.
Yeah, well, so tell us more about how to people get connected with you.
Because I shouted. How do they connect with me?
How do people connect with you?
Go to my website, michelle@michellepascoe.com, or they can email me at michellepascoe.com, phone, LinkedIn. I'm on all social media. I think the most important is actually planning when you're going to do the CX Summit. Seriously, I mean, go and have a look on the website, Disney. See all the courses that you can do. I love the CX Summit, and as soon as those doors open again for it, I'll be going back to it, because what it gave me an opportunity now, class of 165 attendees, from 35 different
165 countries. People like Michelle Pascoe. Yeah. That sounds pretty wild, actually.
But, you know, it was interesting. There was probably only a handful of people that were from the hospitality industry. The majority of them were from hospitals, government departments,
how amazing.
Singapore Zoo, military. The hospitality was like so far down the pecking order, it really shocked me because I sort of, and that was where it was really quite interesting because when I did the delivery to customer service in Orlando, Ken, you would have loved this. It was a luncheon that we went to, which was at the top restaurant. And there was only a smaller group. There was only about 40 or so of us went in. And it was all the lunch that's near enough, something like that. And so to people that aren't in the hospitality industry, when we arrived at the front door, the vacuum was out. And the door behind the reception area was open and they couldn't find our booking. And I'm thinking, seriously? And then the food was out and the tongs were missing on a couple of things.
Yeah,
on the name. And so I'm
was this a little test, was it?
Yeah. So it was thinking, and then so we had it and I'm going to people, this is wrong. And then you saw a cast member with a telephone, which is like, they're not allowed to have telephones.
Uh-huh.
So what they were showing you was, when in our world, because we're used to seeing those things, I was picking it up, but how others just accepted
it. Don't even notice.
Notice. But then when they were shown, it was like, oh, my gosh, yes, that meal was great, but how much better could it have been if those
kind And of you've things- identified, just kind of wrapping up, a great little training trick too, isn't it?
You know,
like 10 things that are missing in this picture.
Yes. Yeah. Like, I was going, seriously, somebody could have an allergy against this. And where are these tongs? And what's that person?
Nice. Yeah. Wow. Well, so great to talk to you, Michelle. Really, you're very inspiring. And I love the work that you do because a lot of organisations do, you know, a whole lot better with the customers that come through their doors.
Yeah.
Look forward to talking again.
Thank you so much, Ken, for the opportunity. And as you said, experience is my passion and, you know, coaching those intentional leaders to ignite the potential in the team, I think that's what the key is all about.
Brilliant. Yeah,
thank you once again.
Thanks for joining me. I hope you're feeling inspired after listening to this episode. You'll find the show notes and links for today's episode on your podcast app and look for the link at the top of the hospo-reset.com website. Don't forget to subscribe to the weekly Hospo Reset newsletter and connect with Ken Bergen on LinkedIn and on Twitter.